It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Wednesday the 26th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Usually here on Marketplace, we have theme music when we do the numbers. But when markets open, today's tune should probably be this one. King, the company that makes the wildly addictive mobile game Candy Crush, has its initial public offering today. The company's been valued by some estimates at as much as $7.6 billion. But like so many 80s bands you've heard and never heard of, King might be a bit like a one-hit wonder. Beyond the company's big game are the lesser knowns worth the dollar bills. The answer might be in its revenue strategy and its digital demographic, as Kate Davidson reports.
There's a word for this, says Jack Kent with IHS Technology.
What they've managed to do is exploit the freemium business model.
That's when you download a game free but spend on extras inside the game. He says King has developed a strong analytic structure to understand how people behave. It's really good at data.
It's constantly monitoring what people do, when people spend money, what stops people playing the game, and then it builds that out into the wider audience.
And the makeup of that audience is changing. Lewis Ward with IDC says most people spending money within mobile games generally are women. He says King's success is about more than big data. It's about marrying that data with game development.
Is that they have a set of capabilities internally to produce games that are pretty addictive and that get women in particular to open up their wallets.
Now analysts want to see if the company can produce a string of successes, not just a Candy Crush cash cow. I'm Kate Davidson for Marketplace.
It's safe to say Google Glass has had an interesting few days. The company's augmented reality display just announced a partnership with the Italian eyewear company Luxottica, which owns Ray-Ban and Oakley. And that move is surely part of a broader campaign from Google to get people to fully embrace glass, which hasn't been going so hot for the company. How come? Let's ask our friend and New York Times tech columnist Molly Wood.
If it's this much work to convince people that it's not a nightmarish, privacy-invading, jerk-creating technology.
Right.
Maybe it's not working. Maybe we're not ready.
So if Larry Page or Sergey came to you and said, Molly, I'm trying to get this on people's faces, what would you say?
I think the fundamental issue is that it's too soon. I actually do believe that society is going to start to adapt to a more transhuman and slightly more cyborg phase of existence. I really do think that. But right now, we're a little freaked out by somebody who's staring at us with weird sort of robotic-looking glasses that may or may not be recording everything that we're doing.
What does Google do now then?
I'm surprised that Google continues to push Glass so much as a consumer product. I always thought of Glass as a bit of a proof of concept that would inform other technologies. I think that Android Wear, for example, is something that was enabled by things they've learned from Google Glass, and that they'll move us in this direction in more subtle ways.
Molly Wood, tech columnist at the New York Times. Molly, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Like any other large city, Kinshasa, the capital of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, has some traffic problems. The city's 8 million residents navigate intersections with the help of traffic cops. But sometimes those cops demand bribes and the system is disorganized. Enter a group of local engineers who have built 8-foot-tall robots to deliver the essential stop-and-go commands. The BBC's Maud Julian has been reporting on this in Kinshasa. Hello, Maud.
Hello.
I'm looking at a photo of what looks like a scary-looking robot standing in the middle of a busy intersection. What am I looking at here?
Well, you're looking at one of the two huge robots that have been directing traffic in Kinshasa for 3 months now. I'd say they're sort of retro in style.
Yes.
If you look closely, one of them has sort of 80s sunglasses. So these robots move. So at the end of their arms, they have screens that change colors, so red and green. On their torso, they have screens as well that change colors and that also indicate when the pedestrian pedestrians can cross.
Why robots instead of regular traffic signals or traffic lights?
Well, first of all, in Kinshasa, a lot of the crossroads are actually regulated by policemen who are, first of all, criticized by the population because they harass people. They constantly ask for money. And I actually asked a few people on the streets in the capital, Kinshasa, what they thought of these robots.
I think it's great. Before the robot, there were lots of accidents. Now we can see a big change. There's order, the traffic is fluid, and it's all thanks to the robot. People respect the robot more than the policeman, because people used to ignore policemen when they told them to stop. Now the robot takes people's photos at a distance if they don't stop. It's a big progress.
The robot is better than policemen, because it does its job according to the order. It doesn't bother us, ask for documents, or arrest us.
Well, it is really interesting, the idea that a traffic robot can't demand a bribe from passing vehicles. And these are also solar-powered, these robots?
Yes, they are solar-powered. You know, it's difficult to get electricity in Kinshasa, but it's certainly not difficult to get sunlight.
Maude Julien is with the BBC in Kinshasa. Maude, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Here in New York, we're very good at ignoring traffic laws, and I, for one, would welcome some new robot overlords. Photos of those retro robot cops at marketplacetech.org. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM, American Public Media.